podcast enthusiasts, welcome back to the show. Appreciate you as always. Appreciate you more than always. It's been a couple of weeks since I put out a pod. Got to apologize for that, firstly. It is not my intention to go without an episode a week for the next year. I'm setting some big milestones and they start today. This is going to be the first of many podcasts I'm looking to extend the podcasting for two a week. Now, I'd love to know what your thoughts and feelings are about that. Let's interact. Let's open up the dialogue. How does it feel to have two episodes a week? Is that too much? Is that not enough? Like, talk to me. Would love to know how you feel about two podcasts a week. I'm going to double down on all the processes. So without further ado, Ben Bidwell on the podcast. He's a human potential coach and a breathwork facilitator. Anyone that delves in the world of breathwork, holding that space, I always want to engage with, I always want to talk to, because there's something special and unique about every person who steps into and understands the power of breathwork and is able to hold that space with so much emphasis on this human experience. I've got probably more breathwork facilitators, you could label them under that bracket, on this podcast. Ben is someone that, in my opinion, has taken the leap against the grain, what we would call conformity, or like being comfortable. But although there's a lot of discomfort in conforming, it seems to be the path of least resistance. And this man has definitely carved out his own path, asking some powerful questions along the way about how we all can live in a more intentional and purposeful direction. With purpose, you know, what does it mean to really feel purpose in this life? Call it personal development, call it what you will, it all comes under the same thing for me, which is growing as an individual, looking into system structures and our own practices that either fill us up or drain us. So we dive into masculinity. It's a big theme of this podcast, competition, embracing contrasts of the human experience, and how to live with, of course, more purpose. Ben is someone who's got some exciting publications. I mean, I get such a great opportunity and lens into someone when I start researching people for the podcast and realize they have done so much. And it's just such a pleasure to have Ben on, because he has been on some incredible channels, incredible platforms, speaking about this stuff. And it just wouldn't cross your mind that he's been offering this conversation up in so many different ways. He's done an incredible amount of podcasts. Such a joy to have him on. I hope you find this valuable. I'm sure you will. Now, on the subject of masculinity and being a man, I have a men's community, and this has been running since September. It is a deep dive into what it means to be a man, education, intention, ownership, responsibility. I've created this group, and it is so exciting that I get to have these conversations, and it feels such an intimate environment when we're on these calls. I offer three a month, amongst other practices and other opportunities, to gather together in person. But the men's community is an online offering for men who are open to step into the uncomfort, to step into the fire and understand themselves a little bit more, with the support and accountability of other men who are going to healthily call them in to their experience. I've seen some powerful shifts over the last 3 months, and in January there's an opportunity, it's going to open. I'm going to allow some more men into the group, and if this sounds like something you want to be a part of, shoot me a message, send me a message on Instagram, or respond to my newsletter, which will be going out over the Christmas period. And the group will be open for a week, and then it'll be closed. And then for 3 months, we'll go on a journey together. And even though I have these 3 month closings of the group, it's a rolling month and there's no contract. There's minimal terms and conditions, but there's certain things we agree on and it makes for a powerful space. So if this feels like something you want to be a part of, then shoot me a message. Got some exciting things coming up in 2024. I'm actually off to Lanzarote in Spain for 10 days. I feel like it's a business trip for me. I'm going to use it as a container for 10 days to dive into some great things I want to manifest in the next year. It's going to be a beautiful container, so expect to see more content and value on the channel. And if you're not receiving the newsletter, head over to thechrisgeisler.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you're going to hear more about what is coming. and over to the sponsors of the podcast. We have XL Coffee now, incredible company, which I am proud supporters of. If you want £10 off your first purchase on a full flexible plan, then head over to the website and type CGP on checkout. If you sign up, this makes one bag of 450 grams of coffee worth £8. It's normally 20, this will be £8. So you get to sample their coffee, a pretty huge bag. It's gonna probably last you a month. Like, this comes at 450 grams a bag. So it's a double bag compared to most brands. You get around 30 cups of coffee for £8. It's a pretty good deal. I would take advantage of this opportunity. CGP at checkout, they're a phenomenal company who I wholeheartedly support. And they're organic. They have three types of coffee. They don't mess around. And they're doing things in an impressive way. So please check them out. Next, we have Wild Soul Sandals. Yes, we're in the middle of winter. It is the winter solstice next week. But here in the UK, we've actually been experiencing some pretty warm weather. The Wild Soul Sandals are making it all the way through the winter. They're an amazing brand, which, again, I'm proud supporters of. They support me. I support them. They're a phenomenal company that are focused on adventure sandals. I was with Tom the other week in Wolverhampton. We actually ran the 5K park run. It was quite the experience. Three of us in sandals, middle of winter. The amount of conversation and the amount of looks that we got. But it was beautiful because we actually got to connect with more people and discuss the benefits of minimal footwear. You might know, you might not, but it used to be very common for the word minimal not to be even associated with shoes. It was just normal. Cushion shoes only really came in for running in about the 70s, so 50 years of compromising footwear. Sure, athletes might agree with themselves that they get to run faster, but what does that come at a cost of? If you're looking at health or if you're looking at being an athlete, two different things. For me, it's always made sense for me, for my feet to be healthy, to be supported in a way that feels more natural. And the further we get away from nature, the more sicker we become. So it just makes sense to have minimal footwear. And use code CGP10 at checkout for 10% off. Let me know how you get on. Beautiful. Thank you for listening, people. It is the sponsors that support this podcast. And I have no qualms of supporting them. One other thing, if the thought crosses your mind and you want to support the podcast even further because you are getting value, then I would appreciate you going over to my Patreon page and then having a little look at the offers. From as little as £3 a month, you can support this podcast. I will add you to the community in WhatsApp and we will discuss month guests. We'll jump on a call, which I'm doing with two of the supporters at the moment. We jump on a call in January. And we are going to just discuss some ideas, some things that we can improve with the podcast, but also just come together to discuss conversations. It's powerful access into a community that are clearly understanding life in similar ways. If you want to be a supporter of the podcast, from as little as £3 a month, it's a coffee a month. It's £36 a year. It's not a lot for the amount of work that I spend on this podcast, but I would appreciate it nonetheless. And if you don't worry, because the people who do support, I've got you covered. So it's all good. It's all love. I will continue to do the podcast anyway. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast with Ben Bidwell.
Thank you.
It has been a long time coming, I must
say. It has, hasn't it? Yeah.
There's some guests that you like go back and forth for a long time and then it just like just surrender. It's not gonna happen.
Okay.
And that's okay.
Was I in that bracket for a bit?
No. You never were. I knew it was gonna happen. Mm. But then it's almost like you develop a relationship with like getting back to each other or like communicating. Mm. And like, does it feel good? Does it feel healthy? To like say no and like I can't do this, or like check in with me then, do the check in, and like just having that like conversation almost of like over the months trying to make things happen.
Yeah, I hear you. You're What comes up for me as you're saying that is I know that I'm a bad communicator.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I just, well, WhatsApp is the bane of my life. You know, I've got so many unread messages on there because I don't want to sit on WhatsApp. And it's content. It's not only WhatsApp, you know, messages come in from everywhere now, right? We're just attacked, bombarded. And I honestly feel like I could spend my day just replying to messages.
I think I do.
Yeah, there you go. I still do, and I'm not replying immediately.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Have you merged the lines, business and social? You haven't over WhatsApp?
No.
So you haven't got business WhatsApp?
No.
Because that's a thing.
Okay. Is that what you've done?
I did, and then as soon as I found out you couldn't go back to the original, because it's two apps, different apps, but you translate everything to business. That's why you get automatic responses from some people on WhatsApp. But it's turned into a business, just like Instagram. It's weird, yeah. Isn't it? Like everything starts off as like a personal blog or a personal thing.
Yeah, right.
And then over time, things have got way more like business-minded.
Yeah.
WhatsApp. Yeah. All this kind of social media. It's business media now, isn't it?
Completely. Instagram is purely a tool for me for business.
Yeah, that's great. Because what else would have been before it?
Yeah.
You know, what you'd have gone out flying.
So true, isn't it?
Chatting to people. I'm so grateful for it, ultimately.
Yeah, that's true.
Because what was the other modality? What was the other method before WhatsApp? Sorry, before Instagram? Mm. It's like, it's free. I would pay for it if it was, there was an option to not have ads and stuff, but yeah, man.
Yeah, it's true. The other option, walking the streets flying. I don't know.
Chatting to people, just like writing out posters and putting yourself out there in that way.
Mm.
Calling. Mm. Call centres.
Mm-hmm.
We're cold calling people.
Yeah. I chose just to take all my clothes off and display that on Instagram and hope that'll do the trick.
It did.
Which it did to some degree, right?
When did that drop in? When was that first idea?
I think it happened out of desperation. Yeah, it was like, I need to create something. I need to take control of my life here. I was running a tech company at the time, and it felt so out of control. My hands were in my life felt in the hands of tech guys who were building the product. And I had no control. And so I was like, I need to do something for me that's about me that I can bring alive. And so it was like, what's my passion? And it was like, vulnerability, like this masculine journey of like letting ourselves be seen. And so I knew that was what I wanted to sort of enter into. And then I went on this trip to America, and we were in Yosemite National Park. It's beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been. Oh, it's incredible. And we were in this valley, in this waterfall, and I was with a friend, and I think we'd been like pissing off our friends like with all our photos. They're like, all right, enough now, like we know it's beautiful, like, you know. And so then we were just sort of upping the stakes. And so we did this one. We took all our clothes off and we like gazed off into the distance in this incredible like setting. Almost just sort of joking around. And then invariably like everyone exploded on that image. And you know, mostly sort of people abusing us and sort of having a laugh. But, you know, there was a bit of like, okay, that's quite a cool photo actually. What have you done in some capacity? And then I came home and saw that image. And I was like, do you know what? That image is kind of the representation of vulnerability in some capacity. There's this sort of demasking, this kind of raw nakedness to it, especially in this beautiful nature. And I was like, can I marry that up? Because people seem to sort of engage with that. Can I marry that up with this path that I want to go on? And soon after that, I was working with a photographer, getting these images. And
wow. And was it always comfortable for you to be naked with your friends?
I played rugby. There's always sort of changing room mentality where you know, after the game, everyone's just sort of naked and...
I think rugby is a bit more lighthearted. It feels like a different energy.
It is a different energy.
There's like, we know the rugby guys, it's like, it is quite feminine in some ways. Like there is this kind of touchy, well, so is football, but like in a different sense, I think.
There is, yeah. But what it did do is sort of just teach me it's not unnatural to be standing around naked and sort of just getting on with it. And you know, from an early age, that was my norm. So I didn't really think too much about it.
Well, what happens when we don't spend time naked with people is we only see certain people naked. And as a kid, you see pornography naked. You think that's what's normal.
Mm.
Of course, it seems so obvious, but it's like, unless you are seeing other people naked, you will develop ideas of what it means to be naked and parts of yourself.
Mm.
And it's like, it's so revealing, because when you're around people, like, I love it. I just, any opportunity. I ask for permission. That's one thing I've realized that helps.
Yeah.
I rarely that people say, like, oh no, I'd rather you didn't.
Yeah.
But like in the sauna, I'll be like, I'm going in naked. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Because it just, it helps. I think it just helps other people see that, like, no one's the same.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no ideal.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I hear you. And actually, can we talk about it? One of our first experiences was at Medicine, where there was Absolutely. That invitation.
Yeah, man.
And that was actually a time when I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah, no.
In that situation.
It's interesting. So yeah, for context, at Medicine, we were in a workshop, and the invitation was to take off all your clothes, and it would allow us all to be seen as men.
Mm.
Yeah. From the day we were born, it's just like that rawness, that openness. Just to see, even just as an exercise, to see what comes up, right?
Mm.
So what was going?
I'm trying to think at this time, but I didn't feel, like, I don't want to be disrespectful to the experience we had, but I didn't feel comfortable in that environment from the word go. And it felt like we did, I think, what was it, the second or third exercise we did, I think?
There was a lot of different things happening, yeah.
It was quite early on, wasn't it? And I just didn't feel...
It felt like that's what we were there for, almost.
Mm. Mm.
To really be revealed.
Mm. But I think that, you know, it takes safety. It takes a sense of, to reveal yourself is to feel, you've got to feel safe first, right?
For sure.
And I didn't feel in that place. And then I wanted to be true to myself. And maybe I was coming from a fearful place, you know, of some kind of judgment or some kind of just not wanting to be seen in some capacity, not wanting to enter in. But I think that I'm conscious that one of my wounds is that I think I struggle around sort of the alpha dominant energy. I don't want to be competitive, and I don't want to be sort of told by other men, this is how you got to be, this is what you got to do. I haven't kind of pieced all that together yet. It's something I'm becoming increasingly conscious of, but maybe being the youngest child of three boys and having two older brothers and feeling that experience growing up, but I didn't really like the way that whole thing was structured, and being told to do it, and I felt just a little bit of a, like,
it pushes you the opposite way.
It does, yeah. It closes me off.
Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah,
I think it's nice also to just play with those edges. Even Definitely. If it feels comfortable for you to be naked, does it feel comfortable for you not to be naked when everyone else is?
Definitely.
Like, is that okay? Can you then, like, understand what stories come in about, or almost like your perception of other people's perception? You know, and leaning in, just sitting with that, like, do they think I'm not secure in my body? Probably. But like, you know, you are, but for now it's not. But like, or like, I'm not all in, but I know I am. But this is like, feeling, it can work both ways, right?
Okay, I'm so with you. And all of that was going on for me. It's like, and ultimately, like, my whole work, my whole principle philosophy is trying to get to the deepest truth, because all of that is noise, and all of that, you know, make some sense in some capacity. It's what's most deeply true in this moment. And without having sort of the time to kind of process this and work through it in that moment, is either you take your clothes off fully or you don't. The place that I was reaching that was most deeply true for me is that I didn't want to enter into that space. As you say, I was unsure whether I'd be judged for not being naked. But I didn't want to lose myself. And what felt true was to not enter into that. Very tricky to know if that came from fear or truth.
Sure, always learning, right? Always being in the arena.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I get from you. It feels like you're willing to just go there and just not pretend like you know, but just really be curious to your own experience. So what did you learn from your dad then about, like, authority and, like, the alpha? Was that present in the home?
Wasn't at all in my dad, no. Very, dad was very kind, very, like, massive people pleaser. He gave everything for his family, but really at his own cost, had no boundaries, didn't know what was truly serving him, was just sort of swept along and worked really hard, give everything to everyone else. And I saw that sort of show up in a little bit of frustration and anger within him, lack of groundedness. He wasn't an alpha character, but I did see that in my older brother, who was that. And we very much had a relationship where he was my older brother and I worshipped him. And what I learned, something piecing that together, is that mm-hmm. I got a real sense that it feels like I took away his love when I arrived as the youngest in the family. Suddenly I was like the new puppy that everyone wanted to play with. And I think he was sort of looking around going, hang on, that was me. Why is everyone doing that to him?
How does that happen, man? It seems to be a common thing, right?
Is it?
And siblings, yeah.
Right. Like of course. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Because this is like, maybe it's a story around like, you get half the amount of attention or...
Yeah.
It's a really big deal. I think
it's natural. Yeah. Right? I think it is natural. But that, I think from that moment, he was like, this little thing has taken away what I want. And we had this dynamic of like, he, like from that day onwards, from as early as I can remember, the relationship was very much like, I'm putting down. He's taken away what I want. And that's been our relationship ever since, really. And I think it stems from that, because he was quite alpha. Is quite alpha, I guess, in that sense. And so I definitely carry an uneasiness in an alpha environment.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to be nice to each other. I want people to... And I'm all for alpha energy, but not through competition, through supporting each other, through, like, you know, cheerleading one another. Let's all do better here. It's not, I'm going to dominate you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we live in a dominating era.
Yeah. Say. I want to understand that root of, like, that caution over the alpha, like the loudest person in the room. Because often they can be the most entertaining, they're the funniest, or, like, they seem to know the way. Like, often as kids, as men growing up, it's like, the loudest person in the room gets the attention because it would seem that they've got their shit together, or like it might be through fear or just through like admiration of like the loudest person, like that extroverted person that gets attention.
Mm.
Yeah, it's seen to be in our culture like the one to worship, and then being the try and like, you know, get respect from.
Yeah.
Or the one that can fight as well.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Like they just get. You get so much respect for that.
I always wonder if it sort of feels like they're the most fearless. If you're sort of the most, if you're the biggest in the room, it's like you're the most fearless. You're you're the leader of the energy. Sorry, you're the energy of the leader. Mm. I feel
a like leader of the energy as well.
And a leader of the energy, yeah, completely. It's true, yeah. Maybe I meant to say that.
Yeah.
It's that I definitely grew up in an era where that was the goal. Everyone wanted to be that, and that wasn't me naturally. I think it been sort of suppressed out of me from as young as I can remember. So I still had that sense going back to where this started. I got that sense when we were in that room, not to make anyone bad or wrong, but just in terms of what it triggered me. I felt maybe back as that little boy being told what I have to do. Mm-hmm. How this has to be, and when it felt a little uncomfortable, there was definitely like a closure.
Sure, it's fascinating because these archetypes exist, right? Like Taporia is like the one that's gonna like fight to the death, protection, provide. And I often ask the question: is like, what does that? Is that what it means to be a man? Is that what it means to be human? Like, it's clearly a big part of it. Like that served us for a long, long, long time. We wouldn't be here without that energy. But like, is that what we're meant to be? Is that what we're meant to do? And then it's been the process, I'm sure it has been for you, it sounds like, of like many years of just like really excavating that, like the archetypes and the understanding of like what it truly means to be a human and a man in the world. And I always arrive at what's needed, you know, what's needed now. It doesn't really matter what it means to be a man to me now. It doesn't matter anymore. It's like, what is needed now? What's needed in these times? And the pendulum's gone too far in that warrior way. But also it's gone all the way back this way as well. Have you heard of Trevor Bowen?
Yes, I have.
It does this kind of got this framework of the uncivilized man.
Mm.
And he talks about the Marlborough man. Two visceral examples of like the last couple of generations. I'd like to get your take on this actually. So the one is the Marlborough man, the smoke, you know, the Marlborough cigarettes. Okay. There was this cowboy, like, relentless, no emotions, emotions will get you killed, like true. but like this, the antithesis of like the other one, which is the sensitive new age guy, or the snag, or the Mr. Nice guy, which we all know, raised by women, and like rejected and likely raised by a father who was too much in the like, I wouldn't say masculine, but yeah, you could say too much in the masculine, but too much in that like hard energy of like very authoritative,
hyper masculine
for sure. Yeah, it's hyper, which we live in that world, right? Really. So yeah, but the other one's the sensitive new age guy, which is like, yeah, what about my feelings kind of guy.
Yeah.
And it swung all the way this way.
And where I get to with all of this
go on
and especially like even what you're talking about with the archetypes, you know, it's like, it's not about being a warrior. It's about having the warrior within you, but also knowing there are other parts to you too, you know. And the warrior without a lover, you know, is a bulldozer, like charging along without any sensitivity as to what's needed. You know, you said it's not about being a man, it's about being a man that's needed now. Without the lover, we're completely disconnected to what is needed, and we're just bulldozing along in our own, you know, our way or the highway, and that's not what's needed. We've done that, that's been the way.
Yeah.
And what is needed is yes, warriors, but warriors who are aware and sensitive to what is required. And in the same way, like, it's, you know, we just pigeonholed the Marlborough archetype, the snag.
Sensitive new age guy.
And it's like, what about sitting in the middle? What about taking the bits from both and sitting there and being sensitive, but also being knowing when your emotions aren't serving you? You know, and I kind of see that in our society, that we pigeonhole and we go all in. And so much of my work has been about to let go of like what I'm meant to be and how I've sort of pigeonholed myself, and to start to celebrate and expand into all of what is already within me. And that's not to deny that there is sensitivity. Mm-hmm. There's also powerful leadership, and to know that I can be everything in between along the way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's the alchemist.
Ah, okay, beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice.
It is, right? It's really playing with these energies, coming into center. That's why we love balance. It's like, it's all about balance, all about moderation of these energies. But it's like, you only know balance when you swing one way or the other, when you go past that center. But it is, I often feel about, when I think about a warrior, I think about like the Tao, or like the way of the warrior, of like the warrior poet, or someone who's been able to like alchemize these energies and express them when they're needed, but like from that center. That's my journey. I feel like that's everyone's journey, really, men, women, or whoever. It's really to express and come forward with what energy is needed in the moment, and to know the difference between the two and how to express it. And that's why I love, I think it, like I said many years ago, I was like, to be able to like go all the way into my feminine and sit around and make headdresses in a woman's circle, like be that, and then also be the, I guess I'm really trying to think of like the like healthy masculine, would just be, let's say yesterday I was at Play Fight and I was in the arena of like, again, in a circle, love circles, and my friends have got facilitated in this Play Fight. Have you heard of it?
No, but I want a piece of
this. It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. I don't go into it too much, but it's a very contained environment, and there's certain things you agree on. It's essentially, it is the play, but also the fight. There's certain rules around, you know, punching. You basically got to pierce, like wrestling. But like, I was in the arena, and I'm really activating this kind of, it's Wario, like, gets charged and really gets like activated, and I lose all sense of time. Like, I'm in this flow of like real like strength, really activating like strength and just harshness and really ability to just like go, you know, action, and have like a real like structure in that, and not let the part of me that's hurt or injured or like wounded and needed love or validation in that moment, it's like, now I can just go. So like, I can be in that space as well. Or boxing, like I was sparring the other week with a man in Wolverhampton, and just getting smashed and like just trying to survive, but like having to stand there and take it. And that's like, yeah, I can be that as well. It's always always felt good to know I can be in both spaces. Mm. Or like want to be in both spaces, you know?
Mm. Oh, that's epic, dude. I feel like that's missing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so, like, as you say that, I want it. I'll get in the ring with you. I'd love to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's so important. I had an experience recently, a few weeks ago, where I was invited to really step into and embody that warrior energy. Really scream and shout, square up, you know, and flare up, and but then high five after. It's not a competition. It's like, it's a loving, but it's embracing and embodying that. And I came out of that experience just feeling so, like, reconnected to this driven part of me that does get shit done, you know, and I miss that, like, when else do I go around expressing that part? And it, like, not only, like, and when I say express, I really mean embodying it, because it's easy for me to sit and to talk about being a warrior, but that's nothing compared to embodying it, getting in the ring, in the fight, experiencing it, and then coming out, and now you've just embodied that warrior, right? And when do we get to embody the warrior in a healthy way in today's world? And I miss that.
Yeah, that's why this play fight is so, it feels profound, because also we observe what's happening. We're observing a fight, which is all about connection, really.
Mm.
That's really at the base of the intention of the practice. It's about connecting with each other, exploring each other's edges, exploring your own, and competing.
Mm.
What's competing been like for you, and what would you say is, like, how's that shaped who you are, like, competition? How would you define, like,
I'm getting back into competition because I've resisted it for a long time. What came to me when you were talking about that is, I was like, competition but without outcome. So, you know, yes, being in competition, but not it being good either way at the end of it. So you're showing up, you're giving your all, but you're not defined by the result. You're defined by your experience.
Interesting. So, yeah, like no expectation of...
No expectation, no attachment.
Yeah.
But from your own place, yeah, I'm going to give this everything. And then at the end of that, knowing, cool, well, it was what it was. He was better than me. And I have no, there's always going to be someone that's better than us, right?
Mm.
If that's what happened, you know, or I was better than him. But next time someone else will be better than me. And that doesn't define me in any capacity. It's how I show up.
Mm.
And did I show up without fear? Did I express? Or did I go to dominate? Did I hide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll often judge the whole experience on that end result, right?
Yeah.
And totally. If you take that away, you take that result of, like, who won, essentially. The winning comes down to the last second, because all throughout the game or the match, whatever it is, you'll be competing, but you'll be in it and you'll be present, and it's about that process.
Mm.
I think when we say, I'll just enjoy it, have fun, it's not about the winning, I don't think that's the best language for it, because it's like, it's been used a lot. And I heard someone... yesterday speak about, like, it is about having fun, but, like, there's a thing we can do better than just say have fun, you know. It's not about the result. It's like, no, there's so much in the process of, like, what are we learning, what are we refining, how are we, like, coming together to share common values and goals, and actually learning about each other in that process, and standing up for each other and standing up to each other. You know.
Society doesn't teach us that at any I think as kids, you know, when you say, if I were to say to like a godchild of mine, you know, how was football, he'd go, yeah, we won 3-0, or yeah, we lost. It's like, he didn't tell me how it was, he just told me the result. And that, from, like, I can just picture that from, like, five upwards, and there's no conscious space where, like, yes, what you just said, I'm so for it. But do they have any trust that the people that they're playing with are coming from it in the same space?
Mm.
Just generally, the environment is not that, is it? But which is beautiful for this, what you're saying now, this play fight, where everyone is showing up. They know the conditions. We're now showing up, so now we can give it our all.
Mm.
We can perform. There's a trust there that we're not here to destroy and to dominate or to cause harm. It's at the end of it, there's a trust.
Yeah,
I think that's missing. You know,
Absolutely. And it's beautiful in this arena to observe like a real safe space for people just to express and fight and play. Like, when was that ever okay as kids?
Mm.
It was generally not okay. There was no space. And you look at the animal kingdom, you know, look to nature, you'll understand everything better. Like, you'll see animals playing, you'll see them exploring their edges and their boundaries through play.
Mm.
And it's everyone gets that. But then when it comes to humans, like, I remember when I was a kid, it was never allowed. There was no, we'd have to wait till the parents like left the house, and we'd set up like the floor, and we'd put cushions everywhere, and we'd wrestle, and it was like we'd explore the edges, and we'd stop when someone got hurt. Okay. Mm. It's too much.
Yeah,
we'd always kind of know that that was the stopping point. It's like, yeah, no, come back from that.
I definitely had challenges of that growing up, and I did that with my older brother, but my mum used to try and stop it and say it's only going to end in tears, and invariably it always ended, obviously, my tears. My brother's 6 years older than me, he's way bigger and stronger, and he would just he would take it too far every time in that sense, and there wasn't that trust, you know. So I'm sure that left me with some challenges around competition and like not wanting to.
Well, what it can do is provide context for deeper rooted stuff.
Mm.
So like your brother who always took it too far, okay, well, why? Because it's not true for everyone.
Mm.
So like, what is in him that is not meeting his needs, or like, what is he trying to express through that he can't control? It's like when kids have anger, it's like it's a signal to understand like their experience. It's not just that they're an angry kid.
Of course.
We fucking judge and label that all the time.
I'm so with you.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, completely. And if I give it context, I think I now when I sit in the space, you know, my brother probably was in a space where it's like, here's my chance to, you know, create a bit of pain on this thing that took my love.
Mm.
You know, but it, as I say, the result for me was like, I can't trust these kind of combative spaces.
Well, imagine you and your brother, and you were able, after he took it too far, for you to sit together, just sit on the floor together, and each take it in turns to express how that made you feel. And then you would turn around back to back, and then you would open up to other space, and your mum would express how she felt in that environment.
Beautiful.
It's like a practice that is so powerful
when
you can just receive and speak from your experience. You like learn so much, and there's these little tools and technologies in the play fight that allow us to like, yeah, really invoke feeling and be like, okay, how did that make me feel? How did this person taking it too far make me feel?
Mm.
Do they ever get a chance to really listen to how it makes other people kind of internalize it?
Mm.
What about competition with yourself? How did that kind of shape?
I think that's where I'm building that inner warrior now. It's like, let's get a bit competitive for ourselves. Let's be really driven here. I think I've been guilty as I've gone on this journey of sitting and going, you know what, like, let's let it all pan out. You know, just, it's all going to be trust that you've got this. Without that, missing a little bit of that inner drive where it's like, no, like, it matters. There's always been this part of me that's like, I don't have kids, and I wasn't in a relationship for a long time, and it was just on me, and I could kind of just sort of, I could just flow along. No one needed me other than me. And I'd see some of my friends in competition, like a little more showing up, more like getting ahead of me. Not that it was a competition between us, but I could see them because they needed to put the food on the table for their family, for their kids. And they had that drive, and I kind of missed that a little bit. And I wondered if that held me back. But ultimately, you know, I've got to create that within myself, and I haven't. It's something that's been missing. So that experience I mentioned before about the warrior, you know, getting, being big, being like, come on then, like, let's go. And raising my voice, expressing from the depths of my core and shouting, created like some energy inside of me that I hadn't felt before. And I was like, I need that. I need more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not in competition, not to defeat anyone else, but in my drive for me to create my legacy, to take me where I feel like I deserve to go, where I deserve to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been missing in my life, for sure. How do you find it? Because it's, we work for ourselves, right? We're independent.
I don't think I view much through the lens of competition, but when the question's asked, like such as the play fight, it's amazing to lean into what does that mean for me? Like, am I being competitive? Because I'm just facing in a direction and I'm like not stopping until like it feels like I can't stop. And the more I refine like what's true for me and how I can speak from and lean into like the connection to myself and show up there, that's all I'm focused on. But the competitive element, I don't really look through that lens. I think it is a very useful thing to constantly measure yourself from previous years and just know that you're constantly improving, getting better, because I don't think there's any other way other than moving in that direction. But like, I believe that competition can bring out our potential. Like, think about over the last, you know, even taking something as competitive as the Olympics, which is like the pinnacle of competition. And the root of the word competition is com means to go, and then attition is together. So that's all it really means, wow, to go together.
Yeah.
But there was something to do with the French and they changed it, and it means like to fight against each other. Sorry. But it's beautiful. Like, that's the root of the word, is to go together. But it can bring out the human potential. Like, I don't think we ever get stretched unless we're up against something. And because there's not that much in the world now that we need to be up against, in terms of like externally, I mean, there's a lot, but yeah. I guess in terms of like how we exist together as humans, like forging beautiful, I guess like exploring that potential within each other through like competing, actually, like teams, and we can understand ourselves a lot through that.
That's where, you know, you've mentioned play fight, but I keep getting drawn to jiu-jitsu too.
Sure.
You know, because there is that element of competition in terms of, you know, you've got your rankings, you've got your belts and stuff, but there's so much respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like it's, you walk into a jiu-jitsu gym and it's part of a brotherhood. You know, and no one is there to defeat the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to collectively go back to the intention of the word, right?
Mm.
To collectively rise and to use each other as sparring partners to better yourself. And collectively everyone grows, and I think that I'm so drawn to jiu-jitsu. I'm sure, have you had any experiences? I'm sure
I have. Actually, at like a men's event,
right.
My friend brought it in, and I always knew that it was something I was going to connect with, just because of the people that who would talk about it, and I'd be like, I get their values and I resonate with them. It's like surfing or climbing, or like, I just kind of get, I'd enjoy it and I'd love it, because it's like problem solving and it's like really present flow state and physical and like all body exercise. Like, I just kind of, I just knew I'd love it, and I did. But it's also like it would require a lot of fucking dedication.
Yeah,
it's like 3 days a week minimum
to
like get anywhere, I think.
Yeah,
because it's just an hour would go by and you're like,
but then what if you're not trying to get anywhere?
I
hear you, by the way. I totally hear you. I don't know.
Sure, but I definitely, I don't know. I've never really gone to like roll at a gym, so I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I've got a good friend of mine, and he did it, and he does it. He swears by it, and I can sense the jealousy in me. And like, when he talks about it, I'm like, that's like, I should be doing that.
Do you know Arthur Paulins?
Yeah, I do know. Yeah, yeah. Not well.
Last night, but yeah, he rolls in like.
Does it? Yeah.
Was it East London Fight Zone? I think it's called.
Okay.
Have you been there?
No.
Yeah, and it's just. I think it's just another thing. I don't need another thing.
Yeah, I don't need another thing either. That's the thing. But I do feel, in terms of like, you know, this whole conversation around masculinity and jiu-jitsu and competition and you know, all of this, it is. There is this big conflict going on in the world right now. I see it. There's almost these two sides. Maybe it's a bit dramatic, so there's conflict in the world, but this whole question of masculinity, in terms of, you know, on one side you can see these people saying we need more leaders, we need men stepping up and being men again. We've lost what the men, you know, these men. And you've got this other side saying men need to be open and vulnerable and soft. And I think there is this massive divide. And I know men who are in the space who are confused. You know, what am I meant to be? And we're missing this part, that this, you know, jiu-jitsu, that competition in some capacity, this drive to expand ourselves, to be better, to be more of a leader, is really healthy for us at the same time as being sensitive and kind and you know, in tune with our emotions and able to express. And it's neither that one is better or worse. In fact, I'd say they both have huge flaws if they're just looked at in their individual capacity. If we've got male leaders like we have done for so long that have little awareness of emotion or collective experience, and they're just driven by greed and dominance. And then there is huge problems with men who are completely disconnected to that part, and they're hugely emotional and soft, and they lack boundaries, they lack drive, they don't know how to create a sense of safety in their relationship. You know, both have their flaws, and it's but we're either got to be one or the other. Are you a soft and sensitive, gooey man, or are you a dominant, powerful, greed, hungry man? And we're, for me, what we're really trying to do is fine-tune these to meet in the middle, to understand that this is all part of masculinity. It is healthy for men to step into the arena. It is healthy for men to express what they're feeling on both sides. But one without the other is where we lose ourselves.
For sure. I think it's always been about the spaces, because I've seen so much of those things in so many men. When there's the environment for that, when there's been the agreed understand, like frameworks, like jiu-jitsu is a framework to work from. And when people understand the rules, it's like when you tell a man something, when you tell, it's like they'll go and be, and it's just, there's so much noise, like of course there's so much anxiety and misunderstanding of like what anyone's supposed to fucking be or do. But it's like, men do need to just be told something, and they'll just action it and they'll go. But yeah, like you say, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of noise.
Do you see it in the same way, the noise in terms of being like, you know, you've got men on either side, and what we're missing, what I'm looking to see, from not from a selfish perspective, but from a collective, like what I want from this world is to see these men who can blend in both directions and can be both sides. And that's what I don't see so much of. And it's beautiful, like when I sit with you in that space and I can see that warrior in you, but I know that there is sensitivity and I can feel that too. You know, and it's beautiful, but it feels like it's very hard for men to reach that place.
I think it's harder. I think it's easier just to say, I'm one thing.
Exactly.
But I think it's also an unconscious reaction.
Totally.
So it's a numbing, which would result in just, let's say, the warrior energy, the kind of very black and white thinking, very like one track minded of like, I'm not going there because there gets me in trouble. And I think a lot develops as kids. Either, you know, the sensitivity that was nurtured, but there was never this initiation into responsibility or like ownership of like really taking ownership for all of your actions, the stuff you have and haven't done. That if you don't step into that, then you'll just be looking for everyone to just constantly like, yeah, pander to you almost. And it develops so much oversensitivity, or that you've rejected the masculine elements that cause so much destruction and harm. I've really rejected that for a long time, so that pushed me over here. And it wasn't until I started to do so much yoga, and that was doing so much for me, but then it stopped working for me. I had to really, and I rejected all the angry sides of me that got me in trouble, which is often the case for kids, it can be. And then it wasn't until I started to get into like more circles and men's work that I was like, oh no, it's useful, it's needed to have that anger to really come close with it and not reject it. So I think on one hand you've got a lot of people who are just as a stress response being one way, and just rejecting everything else, because that can, it's like a safety thing. It's like it all comes back to survival and safety, doesn't it?
Of course.
It's like, have your emotions got you in trouble? Were they welcome? No. So I'm going to spend all my life just, not doing that.
Yeah.
And it's evident. Like, I go and witness it at home. It's like,
Did it.
Yeah, you did it.
I left it.
And then the side of you that is, just letting things pour out and, just.
Poor me.
Yeah, poor me.
Mm.
Yeah, man.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's, and that's where I really hope we're at the stage now, where it's like we're starting to see this, and we're starting to understand. I love the contrast. I keep coming back to embracing contrast, and I feel there's so much growth when we, you know, pushing our edges, when we embrace the contrast on either side of what we are, and stepping into like the ring might be a real extension of like what we're prepared to do. But that's where we become more of a warrior when we test ourselves. And you know, in the same way of really sitting with the other men, looking around and really opening up as to what is inside of us, might feel like not something we're prepared to do every day, but that's where we're expanding ourselves into that space. And how beautiful is that? And we talk about human potential. Now you've just expanded your potential as a warrior and expanded your potential as a lover. You can now connect more deeply. You can now provide more safety. You've expanded, but that's what I hope we're seeing. I still feel like in my realms, like if I were to put something, let's say on Instagram of me like going and doing some boxing or something like that, there would be some people who'd be like, you know, trigger maybe is not the word, I don't know, but would be like, I didn't think you're about that, Ben. I thought you know compassion and sensitivity, how does that fit into all of this? You know, do you know what, that still there would be some of that reaction. And it's like, you don't realize the more I step into that, the more space I've got for sensitivity, the more safety I'm providing myself to be able to be soft. And it's important. It's only when we get lost in how we want to utilize that energy, which I think a lot of us are lost in utilizing that energy in this world, that it becomes a problem.
For sure. I think that person who that would trigger is looking for, like, they're looking for one way, and it's never one way, is it?
No.
It is a spectrum. And for me, it comes back to like the capacity I can feel. If I can go hard in on something and feel the grief and the pain, the sadness, the emotion, can I also hold someone else in that, but also be a rock for them? I'm like in the arena and I can know what's needed in that moment. But yeah, it's in terms of change, because what we're talking about here is like what's not serving us anymore as men. What's the motivation to change? What's the motivation when you've gone all your life just like not feeling and just not really, and that causing a lot of destruction for maybe your family or just people that you might meet, or friends, or it's like, what's the motivation to actually change? Is there much? Because it comes down to like accountability is a big part of it. And if no one's ever really held you account to your actions, to your things you've said, like, do you really, what's the motivation to change anything? And we live in such isolation that like people can not speak to, you know, you don't have to, you have to engage with people, go about your day but people can be in so much pain because they have never had that accountability to change or step forward. And that's why networks like the ones we're a part of, like, it's so powerful to understand when, you know, if you've not been speaking what you're saying you're standing for, then like someone's going to check in on you, and people that you trust that are gonna come forward, right? Do you have that community around you, do you think? Does that serve you?
Yeah, I do, but I want to go deeper. I want to go deeper into it. It's this fine balance, into like you said before, in terms of like, I don't want more things on my plate, but at the same time, I need to be more selective about things that I do have, because it's good. We need healthy men around us, and we can. I've built a friendship recently with a friend, and he both of us have been like, there is absolute license here, full license to really be like brutally honest, because we both trust where we're coming from. We've got to know each other. He's in a similar space, and I can really feel the trust in himself. He knows himself. And when he shares something with me, I believe in where it's coming from. He's not trying to put me down. He's not trying to criticize me. He's trying to share this as a brother and wanting the best for me. And sometimes it can hurt for me to receive that, because I have to look at myself. But I have real trust in him. And I don't know how many of us have men around us who we can really trust. Maybe you have more, I sense. I don't know. But we can really trust Like, when this person gives me feedback, he is not trying in any way to put me down or in any way projecting his own stuff onto me. Mm-hmm. He is just sitting with me and wanting me to grow. Mm-hmm. And he can see a place where I can expand that I can't see myself because I'm avoiding it or I'm not prepared to
look
at it.
Have you got an example where he's spoke to something that...
Yeah. Some of the choices that I've made recently or I'm going through, and he's really like questioned me and said, like, can I just ask where that's coming from? And like, I saw how this played out, and I won't go into the specifics because it involves other people, but he, you know, he's like, are you sure this is your, you know, you're really making your choice here from your higher self? Because I'm not feeling that it's serving you. And I'll leave that with you, and I'm not telling you, but I'm just intrigued to see how that sits with you, and ask me to sit and reflect. And going back to your original point, most of us don't have that honest reflection. Mm. We don't receive it from anyone else. So in terms of change, we never reach a point where we go, okay, if I'm really honest, I don't feel great about this life that I'm living. Ticking all the boxes, but it doesn't feel great. I'm not deeply fulfilled. Few people reach that place.
Do you believe it's possible for everyone to feel deeply fulfilled and content and have that connection to themselves?
Yeah, I do, definitely. I really do. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I have this kind of analogy of like waking up every morning, feeling your feet on the earth, feeling a part of something, feeling deeply connected to the direction that you're moving in and like the people that surround you. I think it's entirely possible. So much is possible.
It's all possible. What I will say is that we ordered The Myth of Normal, Gabor Mate's. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, it's a massive book. My first reaction was like, Jesus, that shows how much in this world is not normal. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so going back to what you were saying,
in
terms
of many myths of the world.
Yeah, exactly. But it takes like to live in that fulfilled way, we really have to break the norm. I don't believe
that's
the
been
norm.
A process of my life. Just like deconstructing what we believe to be normal.
Yeah.
Like Tony says, it's like, doesn't mean, just because it's normal doesn't mean it's natural.
Yeah. I love that phrase. It's so true. And so that is a challenge in itself. And most of us are so ingrained in what's normal that, you know, we feel like a massive part of us will be rejected if we break that norm. And so that's a challenging work from the off.
And it will. It will be rejected.
Yeah, it will, yeah. Yeah.
I think it's one of the most overlooked aspects of maybe even the spaces that you're in. What it takes to change and move into a direction of your own health or your own connection and to thrive as a human. What's overlooked is the pain and the loneliness it takes to go on that journey, and that the friends who won't serve, you have to say goodbye to. There's not many two ways about it. You will have to say goodbye to friendships. But are you important enough to yourself? That's the question. That's the ultimate test to how much you are willing to let go of, sacrifice and commit to your own journey. Has that showed up for you?
Yeah, it totally has. Yeah. And what I will say in support of what you're saying there is, it's in this world that's dangling, you know, instant gratification all around us. The choice that we all face at some point is like, I can go and face all those things, all these demons that are there, all these things that perhaps are obstructing me from the fulfilling life, all these emotions that I've repressed, this sense of weakness that might be cast upon me when I start accepting that perhaps life isn't perfect for me. Or I could just keep going out and getting pissed on Friday and Saturday, and having enough of a laugh, going on holiday four times a year, that breaks it up. That means I've always got something to look forward to, and just keep earning money, and eventually, like, I'll just break out of this somehow. And that's, you know, it's easier, it's way easier to choose that. I would have continued to choose that. I chose that until the age of 30, and I was well on the way to continue to choose that. It was everything that I saw around me. That was the only world that I saw. I didn't know any other way. And I stumbled upon change by accident, purely because I wanted to change my experiences around sex. And I honestly thought I was just going to become a sex guru, learning new sex tricks through hypnotherapy. Not any of this deep dive into considering what actually my values are, who actually it really is, I really am as a person, what it is I really seek. So I know like how hard it is to want to do this. I did it by accident, and that was my luck, and I'm so grateful for that. But if I didn't have that issue, would I have ever gone on the path? I don't know. And it would have been a lifetime of pain. Mm. Ticking the boxes, everything was looking great in many ways.
In what ways?
You know, just acceptance in society. Yeah, I'm on the path. My parents were happy, you know, earning money and bought a flat and friends and tick, 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 holidays and doing all the stuff. But empty heart, disconnected heart, inability to express love, inability to connect, inability to be in any kind of sense of deeply like fulfilling relationship, of really experiencing a sense of connection. All of that stuff, mm-hmm. all missing. And without any of it, it just kept me in the loop of like, okay, well, I'm not getting anything from that. I'll just keep getting pissed. I'll keep just booking the next holiday. When are we next going to Vegas? You know? And now that's booked in for 4 months. I'll just get through these 4 months now. And then that'll be amazing.
You say it, and to me it's so foreign, but it's so true. That's how most people will live.
But you know what? That's almost a dream. Like, that's if you're doing well, you get to that point.
Sure.
Right? You've got
yeah.
to earn the money. That's what we're aspiring towards.
That's what we're aspiring towards.
And lots of people aren't fortunate enough, you know, don't have the opportunity to earn enough money to live that life. And it's even harder. But that's what we're trying to achieve.
So what have you truly let go of and, like, done away with in terms of what's expected or, like, culturally normal? What do you think you've really, like, you're like, not for me anymore. I'm not, like, going down that route. What things have you severed?
You know, like on a broad spectrum, I put it all under the sense of instant gratification. You know, the carrots that are dangled, all the things that make me, like I had a good time doing, but left me feeling empty after. You know, the sleeping around with girls, the parties. I guess there's so many aspects in and around that world that definitely felt good for a few moments, but then left me like, this really lacks purpose. Like, do I really want to do that again and again and again and again? Until I got to that point where I was like, yeah, I'll do it again because I feel empty and uninspired. So all of that world, like not being able to sit in stillness, not being able to share, express myself, not being able to show up and spend time with people who really understood me, to have conversations like this that really sort of get into our human experience, not be able to do any of that stuff and just live in this shallow world of chasing more, more, more. Give me something to feel, because without that something, I'm empty. So it's all of that stuff. And look, don't get me wrong, there's, you know, we spoke about balance, and there's still a part of me. I've had alcohol once this year, and I'll have it again this Friday. I've got a Christmas party, and I will drink. And there's part of me that dreads it, but there's a part of me that also accepts that it's an experience, and I'll have it. And the next day, I'll just wallow in my pity and I'll get back on track. So it's as long as I'm not, you know, it's so rare that I do it that I can find that level of acceptance. And they're old friends, and part of me feels good reconnecting in that space, but it's not my everyday choice. It's like my very rare choice now.
Would you ever go to that and just not drink? And you've done that before?
Definitely a lot of the time, yeah.
This is that very same environment.
Yeah, like a lot of the time I would, if I, like, for example, I go on a golf trip every year with the same group of friends, and every year, you know, it's there's eight of us and it's seven beers and a water, you know, and it's to the point now it's not even spoken about, it's not even asked. It's not like, they don't say, do you want a beer? And so I do that, but this one, it just feels, it's Christmas, it's like, you know, we'll go to a bar, we'll sing and we'll dance and we'll like, and I'll just meet, I'm meeting my friends where they're at, if I'm honest with you. Mm-hmm. And their friends, godparents, their children, their friends that I've been friends with since the age of 15. And it's not my everyday world, but I drop into it once a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I think one of the most powerful things, I spoke about this on a podcast recently, about not judging myself when I did go there. And that was so powerful. That was more powerful than not doing it. Doing it and not judging myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is pretty remarkable. Like, how good do I feel? Great. I don't want to do it. That's why I don't judge myself, because I'm good.
Yeah. And trusting yourself, you're not going to get caught back into that. Like, that's going to be your norm. Knowing that's just, I'm dipping in. It's something that I'm experiencing.
It's a more conscious way of acting about it, isn't it?
Completely.
It's not like dreading it, not wanting to do it. It's coming up. God. Oh. And knowing, subconsciously knowing, you're just going to let loose and it's going to come out and pour out in a way that's not like, almost you're not guiding it.
Yeah.
I love being in those environments and being the one that isn't drinking. Yeah. And I'm sure you do too. Mm. But like being the one that the people creep out of the crowd and they gravitate towards you and they're like, they're curious. They're like, oh, okay, what's going on here? They end up having so good. It's like great environments for me to, just connect with people that are going to be curious and open to their own, well, their minds being open, essentially, to like something new or, yeah, it's different.
I'm so with you. Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful when those people come out. I've been on some few stag dudes and those people sort of come out and they're like, so, you know, I think there's more for me in life as well. Do you know about that? You know?
Yeah.
And you have those little chats, you know,
So fascinating.
All do it individually and then they'll go back into the group and like, hey.
I know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
What's it gonna take, hey? What's it gonna take for them to just not just to choose? I said you've gotta just do it as an experiment. Like put no expectation on it. It's the only drug you have to justify like not doing and just what's it gonna take for you to just one day, one night, just say no, I'm experimenting with not doing. Because what's on the other side of that, and it doesn't mean it has to be all the time, but if you can get to that feeling of like being really present in a space where everyone's expecting you to be something different, like the gold that can come from that moment of like just being okay, it's, you're essentially strengthening your connection to yourself and like your inner knowing of like that you're enough. You're enough without anyone else's like input. It's powerful.
It takes a bit of work to get it.
Can be re-traumatizing. I want to go back to something we were saying about disagreements. I've got a men's community and it's having creating a space where we can have discussion, and it was back to what you were saying, your friend kind of called you in on some of your stuff, and we've been going since September and it's opening up in January, but we have gone 2 months without our disagreeing, and I was like, this isn't healthy. I was like, why?
Stir this up.
Yeah, nothing's. And I was like, I'm not going to force a disagreement, but like, let's just bring our awareness to the fact that we've not disagreed on anything. Because more so in the modern day, with like all the noise and all the cancel culture and people having opinions, and like you said before, like people jumping on you for having like even just putting out something that might not be like of your nature or like what someone would perceive as your brand. And yeah, essentially I just brought that to Wes, like it's okay to disagree. Like, in fact, this is a space to disagree. Like it's going to be a lot of things are going to come up in that space of disagreement. And can we just essentially practice what we're all preaching through a disagreement and respecting and loving and unconditionally like understanding each other. And then a couple of weeks went by and it happened and it was so powerful. Just like someone just came in with like, no, that's not okay, and I was like, fuck, I said, why have I called this in? This is so uncomfortable, because it was a disagreement with me, it wasn't just two others, and I was like, fuck. I was like, it was so like, it was the pain of it, but like just wanting to eject, just wanting to leave. As we all know, it's like in that moment, you're just like, oh, I can't be dealing with this. But like, can we just see this through? Can we just still lean in and hold ourselves and them at a healthy distance, but also just like keep speaking from experience? And it was just so revealing to be in that, yeah, quite safe space and know that we can disagree.
How did it go?
I mean, I won't go into too much detail of what was expressed, but for me, it was like, I was like, I really want to hear from the other men here who have like clearly read these messages, and how's it been for you? Like, can we speak to this? Like, we've just, there's been a rupture of like, there's been a lot of projection. There's been a lot of like opinion about concluding someone else's behavior. Like, this is what you're saying. This is what you're doing. And that was, for me, I was like, this is not what I'm saying. I don't even assume to know like this thing. And it was just a lot of words, and a lot of words can come in, and especially with messaging, it's like we had to stop and be like, right, we need a phone call.
Yeah.
because there's this is just this is too many words.
Yeah, that is one of the things of messaging.
A lot gets lost in that space.
Mm.
So we're gonna have a call. Yeah.
Mm.
But it was it's a lot for me to hold that space and also be the one that's disagreeing with someone else.
Mm. So you were disagreeing with someone, or someone was disagreeing with you?
They were disagreeing with, well, it wasn't really me, but it was something that I was a part of.
Yes.
Which I was in defense of, really.
Yeah, right.
I was like defending that or this person, and they disagreed with the person.
Okay, got you.
So it was almost like when you have, it's like politics. It's like you both have these opinions about two external things, like other people, someone disagrees with that, and then you're defending something that's, it's not necessarily personal to you, but it's like what you identify with.
Yeah. Or so, you might have a different context of.
For sure. Yeah, different experience. But it's like trying to also just understand what's a projection, and is someone else telling you like who you are, what you stand for, like when you've not said that, or like just trying to, like, it's just beautiful if you, if I can hold myself within that and just be in it and strengthen like what it is I'm trying to say whilst being stressed.
Yeah.
That I'm stressed because it's like I've only got a certain amount of time. It's like I want to be engaged, but there's other things going on. Like, how much time do I dedicate to this discussion?
Yeah.
And it's so easy now. The only thing I keep talking about lately is like how easy it is just not to engage. Mm. You can just cut people out of your life and you never see them again.
Mm.
It's like that's never been a thing.
Nah.
It's only recently where you had, again, accountability. That's why we've all agreed to be in this container, and like we're not quitting. Like, people can, but it's like it's not about that. It's not about just like as soon as something gets uncomfortable you just leave.
Yeah,
like relationships.
I hear you. Yeah, that's beautiful, dude. Well, I'm intrigued to see how it all pans out. It's it's a powerful space when you can be stressed, you can feel under attack and still sit and to listen and discuss.
Yeah, I think it is the one. It's like the ability to communicate things that are important to you and hold other people within that. Like, how, what's the best way to get someone's attention? Give them yours. So can you listen intensely to what their experience? Can you like validate it, respect it, but also can firmly disagree, but I can see it from their lens. That's the hardest thing. I think it's one thing I'm going to lean into more and more, is like how communication stuff, like the non-violent communication. It seems to be like that's the real integration of all the other work, right?
I do think, the way they would communicate often comes out of having done the work. I think, you know, that it's often there is this rhetoric that we've got to learn to communicate better, but a lot of the time we don't actually understand how to hear ourselves. So we can't communicate if we can't hear what's true.
I like that.
Do you know what I mean?
For
I
sure.
I feel like doing that work first, and then you're in a better position to communicate more deeply.
Sure.
I also feel like there's a little bit of a movement that you see on Instagram. Maybe it's just my projection of what I see again.
Go
as well.
On. But this is gold. Go on.
where I love the non-violent communication model. I think it's beautiful, but it's a bit structured, and we're human.
Sure.
And sometimes when you see people like create a relationship, sorry, communication model, and then they sit there and they sit and communicate it in this very rational, structured way that it dehumanizes, and sure, it's effective in communicating what it is that you're experiencing, but it's not, it's a bit robotic. And I kind of just always come back to, can we just be vulnerable and almost a bit messy in terms of like, look, I don't really know what I'm feeling right now, but it's hard, and I'm scared sitting in front of you. I can't quite put the words into what's going on right now, but I'm going to try. Do you have that space? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than like almost getting out our script book. So this is what I'm feeling because you did this, and now it's leading to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're a bit like, what the fuck?
It's like, well, it would make sense for you that you'd feel this way.
Yeah.
Because of your need for validation in this moment that I'm not giving you.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I'm like, this is doing nothing for me.
I know.
So that's my like only thing, is that
I get it. Yeah. It's like you might even feel like the sexual energy in a moment of heat when like you're disagreeing, but you're like very attracted to them in this moment. Like, where's the space for that in this?
Yeah, hang on a minute. I am feeling something strange. I don't know. Like, it's like, can we just sit in the messiness of it all and express ourselves? But again, that takes work to be able to listen and to be able to you know, have the vulnerability or the willingness to be vulnerable, to look, to express that we don't know what's going on, we don't know what to say, but I want to sit with you in that space and see what comes out of it. You know, that for me is the human experience. And I'm all for communication models, but I just don't want us to become reliant in conversing in this robotic way.
Yeah, I agree. I would say, from my experience, like tools and just to understand how to speak to your needs in like a skillful way. It's like how to actually ask a question or like speak directly to what you're feeling that isn't concluding their experience or isn't like essentially telling them what they are or who they are. Or I think the English language, the way we use words to like understand what we're actually saying is really important. Like we often will say like, I feel that you're always lazy. And it's like, well, that's not a feeling. It's like using certain words to like just really getting more intimate with like the language we're using. I think there's so much to say for that.
I'm with you on what you said there. And that's the one, the simplest, the most effective communication model that I've heard that comes from Brené Brown. She says, you know, rather than like, I feel like this is happening, it's just going into that space of saying, because that's not true necessarily. Or maybe it is true, but there's something deeper than that. And that is that there's a story in my head that you don't love me or whatever it is. And that's what's underneath it all. Yeah. If we can get to that vulnerable space, then they meet, you know, if you're sharing that rather than you're being a dick. If we can share the story going in my head that you're not really valuing me and you don't want to hang out anymore.
Yeah, I feel unsafe.
Which is that, but that's the deeper truth, right? That's if we can get to know that that's there rather than the reactive, responsive, you're a dick, I don't like you, leave me alone. Which, you know, very surface, it's loud, it's clear, you can hear it. But
go spend some time in like some public places and you'll hear that. Like,
completely.
Good God, it's everywhere.
Completely.
People are like, on a phone or like, I just hear it in so many. In London, it's like you hear conversations everywhere you go.
It's that again, so it goes back to this, you know, normal, natural thing. You know, it is normal and we all think we communicate that way and just have our 10 p's worth of vocalizing what's there, but when like we're very shallow thinking and shallow expressing, it's like what's underneath that. And when you can get to that place, now we're creating depth of connection, because I'm now understanding you in a far more detailed way than your accusation that I'm a dick. You know,
absolutely. Let's change lanes slightly. What about breath work spaces? Because this is something I've not been in one of your workshops. Like, how's that all going, man?
I love it. I love
but the main thing that you are calling in like next year and like moving toward, or are you doing one-on-ones? Like, what's your work look like now?
So for me, breath work is a tool to open people's hearts, to get them to feel, to get them out of like so much of what we've shared. You know, I kind of feel at the end of a breathwork session, someone could sit in that space and they could go, there's a story in my head that I'm not good enough, rather than conversing before breathwork where it might be like, you know, defensive and accusational to other people, making them feel a certain way. So breathwork for me is a tool that just takes people deeper into their bodies, deeper into their experience, deeper into their awareness and understanding. So I call breathwork, from my style of breathwork, like heart-opening breathwork. So I'm going to rip them open and take them into that place of depth and awareness and understanding. It's just a tool that I use to help people understand themselves more deeply. But it's also a tool within a whole experience that I want to give to people. I want people to feel and experience something. There's so much doing in this world. And the challenge I have is to almost stop people from just doing the breath work. Is if they're doing it well and they're still staying in their head and it's like, I've done that, so now this should happen and this makes sense. It's like, forget all of it. Let's just have a whole experience together within which we're going to use the breath to just quieten the prefrontal cortex, quieten the chitter chatter, and then see what comes out and see what's living inside of you once that's a bit quieter. So it's about creating experiences with breath being part of that, and the experience being to ultimately expand people's potential in some capacity, to feel in a way that they don't feel in their day-to-day world, and to learn about themselves in a way that they can't in their day-to-day world.
What's the most powerful transition that you've had in that space with someone, maybe one-on-one, or someone that's come up to you and after an experience?
I mean, I've how people share all sorts of things, and I'm always a little hesitant because people can be very just in the emotion of what they've just experienced. It's so powerful and the heart is so open that they almost can be like, this has changed everything for me. This is I just saw myself in such a different light, and I can now see why I've gone through this eating disorder. I can see why I've gone through this experience that's been grating me. I couldn't let go of it the whole time. And I'm always a little conscious that, yeah, I can, you know, it's beautiful and it's, and I don't want to take that experience away from them. But, you know, very little happens in a, you know, a click of the fingers. You know, the work for me, and this is, I think, the big challenge with breath work is the integration work. You know, that the breath is a tool for me to open people up. But what happens after that? You know, where do we go from that place? It's not just give them something, feel something, you're done, off you go on your merry way. You know, it's about ongoing from that place. So I'm always a little hesitant. People do have big experiences and I don't want to take it away from them. But there's only so much that we can achieve, you know, in this deep experience of inner world, our inner world, that we can do in a lot of time. But yeah, I do believe breathwork can give us the opportunity to completely change the way that we understand and see ourselves, and that changes the choices that we make, the way that we show up.
Is that because it's dealing with the really taking into people's subconscious? Yeah, ultimately, it's like going back to certain times of your life that were quite pivotal and seminal of your experience, and it takes you back there.
Yeah, and allows you to feel it again. But hopefully, intention is always to feel it in a safe way, right?
What are the ingredients for creating that space, do you feel?
Feeling the energy of the person who's creating that space, you know, that they're held, that they're not judging. That they feel held, ultimately. They feel safe to whatever is going to come alive for them can be held and can be expressed. I always say so much of my training as a breathwork practitioner when I hold those spaces was done before I did the breathwork training, and learning how to hold space and learning how to be able to make people feel safe. It's always the biggest compliment for me when someone comes at the end, rather than them saying, like, just my life has changed and it's complete transition and I saw all this trauma dissipate and now I'm free. And I'm always that, you know, beautiful to hear. I'm always a little hesitant as to whether it's that simple. But what is beautiful is when someone will just say to me, you made me feel really safe and I'm really grateful for the way you guided me today. That for me is, that's the goal. Whatever unfolds from that place is beautiful, but we've got to start from that place of just allowing people to feel safe, not judged. Everything is welcome. Everything can be held.
Beautiful, man.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And how was the experience? I think it was like 2 weekends ago with your friend who did the opera singing.
Yeah, beautiful.
What was different about that? That was quite a new kind of collaboration, right?
Yeah, so I heard her singing at a festival. I was just preparing to do a breathwork session, and her voice was like echoing out into this tent that I was, and I was like, I want that in here. Like, and I was sort of preparing, but like peering out, like who's making this noise? Like, what's going on? It's reaching like into my soul.
Yeah.
And sound healing is a thing, right? We are vibrational creatures, and I felt her music. And music is a big part, I think, of breath work, and just like any ceremony experience, you know, it enhances the feeling and it creates the energy. So we did it in a church where the acoustics just vibrate everywhere. Her voice just echoes around you. And what was different about it? It's a different experience. Like, it's a different experience in person. It's a different experience. The energy that's created, I don't know, it's really hard to say exactly. It was a deep experience, like it always is in these things, but there just was something that...
Imagine they're always different, right?
They are.
It's like every event I'm a part of these days, they're always so different. It's like time of the year, who's in the room, like what's expressed, like so many ingredients and variables to that experience, like it just creates something very unique. I think that's what's so powerful. As you'll come to an event and it will be, everything's pretty unique when you really tune in to like this moment, like sensing everything. I think if you're guided into that space, into yourself, you realize that unique sense of like this moment and this opportunity to really go into an experience and just fully surrender to what it is. Mm. And magic comes from that.
It's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Powerful, man.
Yeah, I the process that we do is very much about letting go. It's like, what are we here to let go of? What are we holding on to?
Mm.
And so from that place, it's I found myself keep saying it. I don't want you to have an intention for today. Like, sure. It's to allow what comes. So I kept coming back to like, okay, don't have an intention, but have an intention of not having an intention, if that makes any sense. Mm. Just to allow, like, if we can fully surrender. I always come back to Einstein's quote of, you know, we won't change from the same place that we created it. We can't create change from the same place that we created it. So many of us are going about our days in our heads, working everything out and piecing things together. And we're not trying to solve any solutions on this day. What we're trying to do is to allow people to come and experience and let whatever is already inside of us that we're suppressing, that we're denying connection to come up through a surrendering, through an allowing, like, okay, I'm ready to hear you today. And from that place, to be able to express it, to be able to feel it, to be able to feel into that emotion that it creates and allow that release. And from that place, well, it will be lighter. I know we'll be life. I don't know if you, some of the experiences I've had in personal development retreats or weeks away or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you shed those tears, when you feel safe enough to like, oh, okay, I'm going to feel this, feeling it and crying. And then coming back to a space at the end where you're like, oh, I just feel lighter. You know, like, we think crying is such a bad thing, but how do you feel after the cry? It's a human experience. And that's a letting go, right? And to take people into that space so they walk out of the room feeling lighter and with more space to go about what it is that they're really seeking in life.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time you cried?
Definitely had some moments in my relationship. I'm trying to think specifically. There's been other times too recently, but definitely times in my relationship where you're just facing, you know, real truth that brings tears. I shed some tears around, you know, what's going on in the world. I don't watch the news, but just moments where, you know, you just, it's on and it's suddenly you're there and you see the devastation. And, you know, on the one hand, I want to feel, I want to be part of this human experience of the like horrific scenes that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, like, you know, the privilege of being in the safety of my own environment and to not get too lost and spend my days in that emotion of sadness, where I feel like crippled of energy and crippled of showing up because I'm, you know, heartbroken in that space.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard Garen Jones talk about, like, I think it was toxic positivity and what that feels like and what that can be like. But, like, constantly focusing on the good.
Mm.
And that's important. I think it's really good to have that, like, knowing of, like, we get to choose, but then when you are full, the overflow then can allow you to look into the darkness and have the capacity for that. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, leaning into people's experience in other parts of the world and what is so evident, which is this chaos and destruction and just madness, and what's also possible and what feels so evident for me is what's coming is like more control, more Chinese state mentality and more surveillance and more centralization of banking, of like cashless society, and more control and more like tabs and data. And that fucking makes me feel so sad because I'm like, what are we giving way to? Like, what are we really trying to trying to gain from that? And it's just power for power's sake. And it's like I feel it in the van and going around getting relentless fines and having no conversation around like that. And it's just very black and white, certain things, and it just feels no room for human behavior. And it just feels heavy. And I do sit with that, and it's grieving for something that's clearly ensuing and making its way, and really trying to just control even greater. And it's sad. It's making space for that.
Yeah, he did. And what's brought a tear to your eye? What's made you cry?
I was sat in ceremony a couple of months ago, and that was definitely a lot moving through. It took me by surprise, actually. Because I was there supporting, but I was also, so I was sat up, and I'd often like back, and I'm just going into the experience more. But something just come over me, and it was around friendships and not being able to communicate my own truth in a moment, or not having what you talk about is that connection, because it's all the words and all the language is such a small part of what that represents. And it's this intuitive knowing of what I believe is what we have put to the one side of that real strong sense of knowing of what to do in a certain situation, whether it's a friend who can't come to an event, and it's are we supporting them in that, are we changing the date for them, or are we not, and just being really fair. It's okay, what's the, how can we navigate this situation? It seems minor, but it's I was sitting with this, and I was if we're true friends, is there another option, is there another thing we're not seeing? And just just being quite busy, and not having the capacity always to be there for people that mean a lot, you know. So yeah, just going through that. It's powerful. But it's a good question. I love asking that, because it's really one of those questions where you're it can really take you back to that, take you back to the time, but also is it important? Let's have that conversation. Is it important to cry? Is it important to just fuck music for me? I'll have a soundtrack that's I'll sit with a cow, and I'll be I'm gonna intentionally let's evoke emotion, because things come up, and it's activating anger, activating sadness purposefully, intentionally, to see if I can go there. I remember, I think I ran a bath once, and I was it was a real practice. I was getting coaching, and practice was to, and I typed in the saddest song in the world. If you don't do that, I wouldn't advise it. It's not nice. It's related to the Holocaust.
Oh wow.
So it's this song that came out in that time, and it's they banned it in a lot of countries, because it's obviously no laughing matter, but say it in jest, but it because at the time it's violins and instrumentals, it's people used it to commit suicide.
Oh wow.
Commit suicide, that never feels good, but it's to end their own life. And it's just sad. There's just so much in it. It's music, right? Music, there's emotion wrapped in it, and people, it's in poetry and in art, and things that are expressive and beautiful.
But I'm with you, there's a space definitely for that. Yeah. I'm feeling some heaviness. Let's see if I can connect to it, and let's see if put some music on, and let's see what it can evoke, because there's something there that wants to be released. When we're busy running around, we're not really giving it space, right? Run a bath, put the tune on, off you go, see what's there. That's in this going back to the myth of normal, you say that to some people, they'll be like, are you okay, are you depressed? So many of my friends would not get that, and I would say if someone's doing that, I'd be like, beautiful. It's such a beautiful, healthy practice. Not normal, but healthy.
I think that's
time. Is that the key?
Francis Weller talks about it. Francis Weller talks about grief. Grief, and that's a big one.
Yeah.
Making space for grief. A friend went to a grief workshop. You heard about these?
Yeah. There's some at medicine and some of the festivals.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't really heard too much, but it's I love this, and I'm not going to say too much, but there was a moment where they weren't grieving, and not one of the facilitators said, you need to speak to it. Because we're here to grieve. And if you're not grieving, we need to honor that you're not, but there needs to be context of why. So, because you're there for grieving, you're not there to like just be on the land. It's like we've come here to grieve. If you're not grieving, you need to speak to it. And then as soon as they did, the grief came. So yeah,
wow,
powerful man.
Yeah.
What's happening next year for you, and what you're most excited about calling in? And you talked about manifestation before. Is that featuring?
Big time, yeah. It's been like it's a missing part of my life for so long. I've been like, yeah, it's just not for me. It's not for me. But yeah, I'm super excited to bring in manifestation, visualization, to start seeing, really start consciously creating the life that I really want, because I'm conscious that I spent the last couple of years really striving, really forcing, feeling overwhelmed, and it like reaching a point where it's like, this is very clearly a pattern, and I can put it down to all these reasons, all these excuses, but actually I'm pretty sure I'd be recreating this, whatever my, even if I had those things sorted, I'll create the overwhelm in a different capacity. I saw my dad create it throughout his life, and you know, I never envisaged me following that, but it's happening, you know. That's how I've been the last couple of years. So I think a big part of me has missed having a clear vision of where I want to go and what I want to be. So 2024 is a really exciting one. I really feel like I'm stepping up at the moment. And yeah, I don't know. You know, we mentioned about getting clarity. I need to do still more clarity work, because I'm not exactly sure. And I don't think that helps me.
Yeah, it's the hardest one, right? It is really being clear. Cause I think anything's possible, and we can really create the life that we want. Like, so much opportunity in the modern day, especially being born in this part of the world. It's like there's a lot that we can call in, and when you know you've got that support and also understanding of the human experience, I think, like you do, it's like so much is available, but it's like gaining clarity on what it is you want.
And that is part of it. It's like, yeah, it could be that. That's beautiful. And that's, yeah, that sounds good too. That's beautiful. I'm happy with either of the one of those on that. Yeah. And it's like, no, let's get clear on this. There's a bit of fear for me around that, in terms of when I'm clear, what do I have to let go of that doesn't fit into that plan? You know?
Yeah, when you say yes to one thing, you say no to many, many others.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but also, not making a decision is a decision.
Yes, so true. So what you're saying is I'm screwed either way. But I do, it's true. And so that's my 2024. I can't tell you exactly yet, but I know I'm excited about it. I know there's a lot coming. I can't wait to be part of the festivals again next year. I really hope. I hope to see you and at the festivals, hang out and share my, I'd love to share my breathwork with you.
Yeah, man.
Take you on that experience. More of where I'm heading is the big picture. But exactly how that looks, I don't know. I don't really want to live in London anymore. So we'll see what that brings. How about you, dude? What's 2024 for you?
Yeah, lots, man. I think I've got another year of van life. Me, I just creating, just refining and concentrating on what I'm doing, like the podcast, really taking that to another level next year, for sure.
It's already a pretty good level, so I'm excited about that.
Say again.
It's already a pretty good level, so I'm excited for the next level.
Exactly, yeah. And how can I provide more value? It's like really provide that value for people.
Do you know what the next level looks like?
Yeah, it's like refined production, like really getting the production to a level that I want, but then also just the guests and two a week. That sort of feels good. Just like really doubling down on that,
so you can get better guests than scraping in the barrel with people like me.
You know,
enough
what
of that world, that's rubbish.
It's a balance between bridging that gap between the mainstream, because it's like I don't feel like there's that many conversations that are really rooted in like not trying to, it's like I say value, but I'm also aware of like that, what is that value? Is it like take homes? Is it like, you know, metrics? It's not. The value for me is like, I forget it was like success. How do you define it? What's the value defined by? Mm. And it's like, can I even measure that? Like, I don't know. But like, what feels good for me is just producing more content that people are resonating with and getting that feedback directly from people, because we can now, and then developing communities around the podcast, and interlinking other communities. Like, how can I bridge spaces through the podcast and connect with reverence and land and agriculture and regeneration, and talk about these themes and food, bring food in, because I've just disregarded it because it caused a lot of controversy. But like, step into that arena of like, how I can bridge people, personalities, and also host a experience in London for like the podcast, and do like a live recording where people can come and meet, and people that connect with the themes of the podcast, and then connect in person. So like, putting on more live stuff, events, and that hopefully like feature at a festival where like put on a podcast or two, and don't know, something like that. That'd be cool.
Epic. Epic.
But then the men's work, men's events, and keep showing up in that space, because it's so fulfilling for sure.
And needed.
Needed.
And you're good at it.
Those three beautiful things.
Totally.
It's true. Thanks, bro. I love the way you move through life. We've only met a couple of times, but yeah, as a soft gentleness in the world, needs more people like you for sure.
Thank you, brother. Likewise. Yeah. I look forward to getting to know you more.
Yeah, man. We should. We should definitely. Join forces in some capacities. Excited, man.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to leave anyone on? Final words of wisdom.
I'm probably bored by now. I'll get off. No, it's all good. We've said enough.
All right. Hey, hug, man.
Thank you, dude.
Yes, people, thank you for listening all the way to the end. Always love hearing from people, listeners of the show. Yes, people, thank you for listening all the way to the finish. Appreciate you as always. Check out the sponsors mentioned at the beginning: Wildsoul Sandals, XL Coffee, proud supporters of the podcast. And interact with us. Head over to YouTube, make a comment on the show. Let's have a discussion. Anything you agreed with, anything you didn't, would love to hear from you as a listener. It's Christmas in a week. Enjoy your time with the family. Maybe the family that do see you, maybe the family that don't. But just move into the time of the year with love in your heart, expressing what's true for you. Enjoy, and I'll speak to you soon.